baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you're listening to another episode of the MMA Junkie Radio Show, and I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the Devious and Dastardly Goes, our ace co-host. Goes, how you feeling on Monday?
Feeling good. Back, good to be back.
You're going to take it easy on that end, aren't you? I can tell.
I just realized that when I opened my mouth to talk.
I knew it. Goes had four wisdom teeth pulled this past Friday, so he's been a wreck all weekend. He powered in here, but I've seen him moping around, you know, so I could tell, like, okay, he's not 100%. I gave him the option of I could just go Jim Rome solo style over here, and he would just, you know, stay on that end and produce. But he said, nah, he said he's gonna man up and try and power through. So give him cut him a little slack if he sounds like the little quiet kid in the classroom.
I just realized, like, I'm trying to speak louder, but my mouth isn't opening as wide as I want it to be. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weird. I don't know.
All right.
But I'm down. Great fight, so I'm ready to talk about him.
Yeah, so listen, lots to cover here. And guess what? It's more on the news side. Look, there are results that we will go over. PFL had their second week of playoffs on Thursday. That was after we recorded our show on Thursday. And then UFC, of course, came strong on Friday. Remember, our Saturday and Sunday was pretty clear from the major, major leagues. But still, two events went down. And so that, along with a lot of news nuggets, I don't even know if we can get to them all, Goes. And there's been, like,
it's too many.
A ton out there. Some of it's the drama style, but other stuff, there's pretty big clarification, man, coming from, you know, the UFC towards their athletes or their athletes towards the UFC. So it's going to be a fun ride here on a Monday, October 21st. Hopefully you're all well and you had a nice weekend. Buckle up, folks. Here we go.
Are you a football fan? Then you don't want to miss NFL 100, a USA Today sports celebration of the NFL's 100th season.
From the best on-field performances to the draft's biggest busts, we're picking the top 100 players, moments, and teams since 1919. See if your favorites stack up to ours at usatoday.com/NFL100. All right, so UFC on ESPN 6, Reyes, versus Weidman took place on Friday at the TD Garden. Look, we couldn't have given you any more warnings that it was on a Friday, aside from just this show twice last week, our social media. So if you missed it, that's on you. But the fights went down in Boston. Dominic Reyes defeated Chris Weidman in the first round of the main event via TKO punches. Remember, Weidman moving up, debuting as a light heavyweight in the UFC. He got smashed, Goes.
It's really one of those weird situations, because when you think about it, he beat a middleweight. Now, granted, it's a former middleweight champion, and if you're going to use that argument, well, he's just a middleweight, then you're supposed to kind of run through him, destroy him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what Reyes did anyway, right? So I think it was a good performance, but at the same time, it kind of levels out because he's not really a light heavyweight.
Weidman isn't.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, and in fact, a couple things just off that alone. For one, much concern on Weidman, the former champion, popular figure in the UFC for a decade now. You know, people, right away, Twitter was blowing up. This guy should retire or at least take a really, really long break. Seems like we've been doing that a lot. But Dana White just came out and said, listen, he either needs to retire or go back to middleweight. So him and Rockhold goes, two former champions, two big stars at middleweight. You know, remember, Rockhold was not only a champion in the UFC, but also at Strikeforce. Very, very respected title. And they both debuted, and it did not go well for either guy. And here's the funny thing, Goes. is Jones wasn't even too impressed with Reyes. Says he needs to take another fight, even though he's like 11-0 overall, 6-0 in the UFC. But Jones was kind of beaten on, if I recall, you know how he went through that murderer's row? Mm-hmm. Well, two of them were guys that wound up fighting at middleweight. I mean, Rashad only had one shot, but Hua has a middleweight body. He was just too lazy to do it. You know what I mean? But he was always an undersized light heavyweight. Mm-hmm. And then Lyoto Machida wound up going to middleweight and staying at middleweight.
Chael's so, middleweight.
Yeah, and Vitor. And I don't understand why Jones isn't just kind of giving him a pass, other than I wish he would just be honest and say, that's not a big fight that'll make me a lot of money. Because if that's it, I wish he'd kind of almost just say that. Now that we're all just being up front and putting our chips on the table and saying it the way it is, the UFC says it, the athletes say it, just say that. You know what I mean? Because that's a pretty impressive resume, and he went out there and did what he did. Now, granted, there's still Corey Anderson and Johnny Walker, and I feel like that's another little semifinal, if you will. Jan Blachowicz also took care of business. And plus, didn't he just fight? You know, he's not impressed, but he just fought two guys that came up from middleweight, Anthony Smith and Thiago Santos. One took him to a split decision, for crying out loud.
Yeah, he's been acting a little strange, but I kind of like it. I like the fact that he's been real vocal on social media lately. He almost has an opinion for everything that goes down. And who's that remind you of? That's Conor McGregor's thing, right? I think it's something that Jon Jones needs to do.
But doesn't he have a consigliere that can go, listen, fool, before you say this, I can slice this up right here. Your logic, I can slice it up into pieces. You know what I mean? So say this, but don't say that. Tweak this after you say that. It's like he comes out and says it, and I just look at it and shake my head and go, what? Now, plenty of times have I said, hey, the hardcore audience will chop up anything you got to say. And I say that mostly towards Dana White, but the bigger stars as well. I guess it's just the casual audience that just soaks it up, retweets it, loves it.
Yeah, what do you think should happen to Chris Weidman?
I kind of like Dana's style on that one. Listen, this is already his fifth in a row. I'd like to give him one more chance at light heavyweight, but this is already, I think, like 5 out of 6 fights that have ended in pretty vicious KOs. And it ain't going to get any prettier, you know what I mean? So there was times when he was on our show, and I remember him saying he entertained even dropping to 170. Even though he's like 6'2", he's kind of a statuesque middleweight. You know, he's not like a stocky Romero or Gastelum type. It always felt like a lot of his weight cuts were a little easier than most people would think. Unless it was late notice. Like when he fought Chael, for example, I think he had to cut 30 pounds in 24 hours. But that's what I tell him. Go back to middleweight, or just take a lot of time off before coming back to light heavyweight. Although, you just never know, man. I think Dana White, like I say, sits in a prettier position where he can just go, no, then I'm cutting you. Or, you know what I mean? Because remember, folks, Weidman has had a contentious relationship with the UFC. A lot of people may not know that, or they may remember us uttering that before. But Weidman, for many years, he would negotiate with Lorenzo Fertitta. Dana White and Weidman weren't always on the same wavelength. But him and Weidman and Lorenzo Fertitta used to kind of jive, and so he would go that route. That's when I believe he was more of like the champion and the decorated ex-champion still in big fights.
The first punch he took, I think, would have dropped a lot of guys. And I thought he took it well. It looked like he was bouncing back. It's the ground and pound that put him out. And it really was just kind of like a hammer fist that to the jaw that put him out. And I think that's just a shot that maybe, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, probably wouldn't have done much to him. So, I mean, you could tell that jaw's just not, that chin's not there anymore. And that's a scary thing.
It is. But do you think Reyes may have earned a shot if Anderson and or Walker gets a win, but it's an uninspiring win?
No, I don't think so.
Well, then who the hell's going to fight Jon Jones?
I think they want Walker.
Oh.
Well, if it were Corey Anderson.
But let's say Corey Walker wins a boring decision. Everyone's booing. No.
Let's say Corey Anderson wins a boring one. Maybe I could see him getting skipped. Okay. Johnny Walker, I think, could win something boring, but wouldn't get skipped because I think they like him.
And let's forget about Jon Jones and all the money he wants to make on his next fight. What if you're the UFC and you just go, listen, we just need to give this guy someone because we just need to have somebody headline bouts. Mm-hmm. We got three champions going at UFC 245. and a couple are injured, but this guy's ready to go. Let's just throw someone at him while all these different storylines develop and other fighters develop or whatever. We send him up to heavyweight, or we convince DC for one more. You know, a bunch of things while they play out. Let's just give Jones someone, and you just throw a body in there.
Kind of like what they would do with Anderson Silva back in the day, where you'd fight like James Irvin at light heavyweight or something like that.
If anything, maybe. Jones, and again, no disrespect to Corey Anderson, because he's on a roll. All right, and if he beats Walker, that's 4-0. He kind of deserves it in a way. Mm-hmm. But let's just say I'm thinking how the UFC's thinking. Like, listen, we need to highlight our stars. Let's throw Corey Anderson in there. If John Jones goes in there and does something pretty spectacular, Jones grows as the UFC grows too. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I just feel like sometimes there could be that fight that you just make because, you know, it's like more of a business decision.
It's a lot of money, though, right, that they would pay him for something like that. But ooh, you're right. Jones? You can't just keep him sitting.
Yeah.
Especially if he wants to fight. I mean, think about how much time was lost just through Jones's antics.
Yeah, because he did a December, March, and July schedule. So he did 3 fights to make up for a lot of lost time. But July, you know, from July to the end of the year is 6 months. So right away, we're already, you know, penciling him in for, like, the January show. We say it that way. We don't know a date or location or anything, but January, February, I mean, that's where the Habibs, the John Joneses, all those people are going to fill in somewhere. Wheelie Zhang. I think we're just supposed to go with Wheelie now, right? Mm-hmm. Just Wheelie. A lot of those fighters are going to be start to fill in right there.
Do you think heavyweight would be the option to go right now then?
For Jones?
What if
no.
you spoil him, though?
No, like, and that's the other thing. We still got to wait out Miocic and Cormier, you know? Like,
if I were, okay, you know, the Consigliere guy?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm John Jones's guy, here's what I would
tell
him.
That's Abe Kawa, too.
I would go, hey, John, you've always wanted to fight heavyweight? Go after Alistair Overeem. It's a guy who used to fight at light heavyweight. It's a heavyweight. But you can get to him. He's been knocked out quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's big looking. It would be a good skin on your wall.
Yeah.
If I were to put him at heavyweight, I would say go after a guy like that.
Exactly.
He's got a name.
A favorable matchup.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad idea. Now, he also has, he's booked, I believe, against, is it Alexander Volkov? No. Volkov has Junior Dos Santos. He's got a booking. Who is it? Walt Harris?
I believe so. Let me double check, though.
Yeah, he's got a fight booking coming up soon. And so if he can get past that, then that might not be a bad idea. But, you know, there's a point to all this, and that's, hey, Dominic, you go fight Chris. And if you win, you can get A. You know, you don't just say, hey, Dominic, go fight Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Corey, go fight Johnny Walker. I mean, there's these guys have to be chasing some sort of a rainbow, some sort of a pot at the end of the rainbow.
Walt Harris.
Yeah. Walt Harris? Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. And Walt Harris, by
even
the
way. Even then, even if Walt wins, I'd say do that
fight. Maybe Walt, yeah. And here's another thing, too. Walt is already saying, hey, no one wants to dance with Francis Ngannou. I'm your guy, you know. But, that's, I mean, he obviously knows he's got to get past Alistair first. But, for one, Francis has fought a lot of fighters. And so he doesn't want to do any repeats. But Francis was another guy that wanted to get on UFC 240. I'm telling you, folks, there's a lot of news out there. So we're jumping around and skipping. But let's refocus here on the Boston card. Yair Rodriguez versus Jeremy Stephens. Great fight, man. These guys went at it. The unanimous decision went to Yair Rodriguez, so congrats to him. I mean, we had to wait an extra month and a half or whatever that was. Maybe just
it wasn't that long.
It wasn't that long, yeah, less than a month. Well, about a month now that I think about it. But it's done, and Yair gets a huge, huge win. He really needed that win.
He looked really good, but it was one of those fights where you felt like if it were 5 rounds. Now, I'm not saying they would fight the same way if it were in Mexico City.
True.
But if it were 5 rounds, it looked like it was going towards Jeremy
right.
at the end. It looked like Yair was gassing a little bit. But granted, Yair had an incredible pace early on, and maybe he did that because he knew it was a 3-round fight. So it's hard to predict that. But it was a great fight, and I wouldn't mind seeing it again. Not right away, but eventually another time.
Well, Yair now needs to get busy, all right? He's 27 years old, so he's in his physical prime. It's got to match his emotional and mental prime as he goes into his 30s. But he has had these long stints without a fight, and now I believe he needs to do something like what Jones did, maybe 3 fights in 7 months, three fights in 9 months, and figure out if he's a contender or not. You don't want to just be the guy that hey man, when you know, when you guys are going to Mexico, I'm your guy or something like that. No, you know, like, you're pretty good actually, you know, and you have a really fan pleasing style and you have a market that's waiting to explode with you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they got to keep him busy.
Yeah. So there you have it. That's the main event and the co-main event. And then, of course, we can come back to this in just a sec. But I do want to ask I want to rush through a couple of these results just so you guys have it. Greg Hardy defeated Ben Sassoli. Did that and then got it overturned to a no contest. Joe Lauzon defeated Jonathan Pierce and was supposed to retire, according to Dana White. Win, lose, draw. He was going to retire. Now Joe's saying, well, I'm not so sure. Macy Barber defeated Jillian Robertson. And Dana White again chiming in on her, saying she's headed for superstardom. Yeesh. Like, I love it that he speaks his mind, but that's pressure for that young lady. Although, she seems like she's ready for it. Remember last week we were talking about her calling out Wheelie and Valentina Shevchenko. So I don't think she's really, like, tripping.
Do you remember when he did that for, was it Philippe Nover? Right, he called him the next Anderson Silva. And I believe that after that, and years after that,
Rose
he
kind had of a little bit of that.
That it got to him a little bit.
Rose had a little bit of that. Yeah. I think Uriah Hall had something so spectacular where they said, "Hey man, we might have something cooking." Yeah,
that was one of the most brutal knockouts ever.
Yeah, so there's been a few of those. Darren Stewart defeated Deron Wynn via split decision on the prelims. Charles Rosa submitted Manny Bermudez. He was gone almost 3 years, and Bermudez is a submission machine, and he actually got submitted via verbal submission armbar. Molly McCann said it was the worst night of her life physically, but she still was able to get a pretty punctuating win over Diana Belbita. Sean Woodson defeated Kyle Bochniak. Sucks for the Boston guy. That's where Bochniak's from. Randy Costa defeated Boston Salmon. Sucks for that Boston guy. Good friend of the show. An Extreme Couture guy. By the way, two TKOs in the first round in a row for Boston.
Yeah, very quick. He's got to rest.
Yeah. Sean Brady defeated Court McGee. Brendan Allen defeated Big Mouth. Kevin Holland via submission, rear naked choke. Boy, I thought Holland was going to get him goes. Those guys actually had a pretty entertaining fight. I saw it at the gym. Tanner Boser defeated Daniel Splits. Fight of the night was Yair Rodriguez, Jeremy Stevens. I don't think anybody was arguing that one. Performance of the night went to Dominic Reyes and Charles Rosa. Part of me wanted Lauzon to get one just because he's one of those guys that's at the top of the
definitely had enough
submission leaderboard. And if this was his final, then that'd be a nice little extra paycheck, you know, nice little bonus as you're walking out of the office with your box, all your pictures and everything. But still, no, I'm not hating on Reyes and Rosa. I mean, the fact remains there was a lot of spectacular finishes to choose from. So let's give a little bit of love to PFL. PFL took place on Thursday. This was the second week of the playoffs, and now we have four more fighters that are already locked into the finals on December 31st in Madison Square Garden, where they will compete to become millionaires. This week it was lightweights and featherweights. The lightweight final, well, actually, it was the main event, and it was the final fight of that night, but it was the semifinal technically. Loic Radziboff defeated Chris Wade. So he's one of the semifinalists. Natan Schulte defeated Ahmed Aliyev. He's one of the finalists in the lightweight division. Schulte is last year's $1 million winner. He had a big, big night. He had that win over Aliyev, and then he got a little bit of a scared because he got knocked down by Ramzi Nijem early in their fight, but he came back and battled.
That was a fun night of fights, man.
It PFL, sure was.
The cool thing about that is I don't know if it's the seeding or what that deceives you, but just about every fight feels even. There hasn't really been too many like runaways where a guy's just been dominating. Like even Lance Palmer was on his back for a little bit in his fight. Like it's just been a lot of fun. And the crowd's been into it. It's been really cool.
Yeah. In the featherweight division, Daniel Pineda defeated Jeremy Kennedy in one of the semifinals. So he goes on to fight for $1 million. He will meet Lance Palmer, like Go said, who defeated Alex Gilpin unanimously, but Gilpin was a gamer, that's for sure. So Palmer versus Pineda is your featherweight finals. And again, Pineda was a really, really big upset machine that night. In fact, Gilpin, to get to the Palmer fight, had to get through, I felt like was one of the favorites in at the beginning of the season. That was Andre Harrison.
Yeah, so, that was a rough one.
Yeah, it sure was. It was a crazy night, man. Crazy pacing, crazy night. all of it on ESPN2 and ESPN+ there for the PFL. So congrats to all those fighters. Now goes, I think we need to cover some news nuggets because there's a lot of them. But those are the results. Any final thoughts there on PFL and UFC?
I thought they were both really good cards, really fun. If you're a fight fan and whatever you gave up to watch those, I thought it was worth it.
And they cleared the weekend for us.
That was weird, huh?
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, no fights on Saturday, Sunday. Here we go with the news nuggets. Listen, man, the biggest one, I think, of course it involves Conor McGregor. I couldn't believe Dana. Dana, at times, swings from McGregor's nuts, goes.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually said he's not the man anymore. Khabib Nurmagomedov's the man. He was doing the rounds of media in Boston. I believe this one was with the Boston Globe. And he actually said that. And I was like, oh, boy, there's a response coming, and it's going to, you know, it's not going to be nice, and this could be the beginning of the end of that relationship. Now, they need each other because Conor's under contract. But more than anything goes, another thing it told me was it could be that Dana White's turning his back, a la Sensei Kreese in Karate Kid 1 when Dutch lost. And remember, he Sensei Kreese just turned around and said, all right, who do I have? Bobby Brown brutal. Left. And Johnny Lawrence, this guy's done, you know what I mean? And he just started to do that little turnaround. And so maybe I'm reading too much into this, and if I am, just tell me to stop. But could it be that those allegations on the other side of the pond and the stuff that's happened stateside, like it's just too much, and Dana could see the writing on the wall, for one, like that this guy just isn't going to fight anytime soon? Or option B, that's showcase number one. Showcase number two, could it be Conor's coming in with some heavy numbers and Dana White's trying to tell him, listen, man, I got the Tony Ferguson card in one hand, the GSP card in another hand, and maybe a Joker up my sleeve. I got plenty of options, player. Don't come in too heavy with your numbers.
You asked a horrible question to answer because I really don't know the answer to that. It can very well be both of those scenarios.
Or both, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think eventually he's probably going to be that guy, I think, that turns his back on Conor. I mean, I think Dana's just all about money, right? And if you're not making the money, then I think he's just – he's not going to put up with your antics. Like,
well, to be fair, I don't think he's in Colby Covington land. I think he's all about just booking the UFC and booking the fights.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he walks into that fancy office and he just goes, what do we have? He rubs his hands together. Let me make the noise. And he just goes, what do we have? And I think Shelby and Maynard and whoever else, that – Hunter guy, mm-hmm. tells him, all right, this is what we got. The same way I just described. All right, so we can maybe roll with Jones and Reyes or DC and Miocic. That's looking good. You know, he's already looking at January because November's mapped out. That's done. BMF and all those guys. 245, three title fights, guys and gals, defending titles. Boom. We're looking at January and February. I think that's why, you know, he's probably trying to figure out how do I make the UFC money, but how do I just basically book fights?
If it is a negotiation tactic, I think it may be a silly one just because guys like Conor McGregor, guys like Chael Sonnen, I think they would just see through that pretty easily because they do things like that. So I don't know that Dana would do something like that. I honestly think, now that I think about it, I think he's being sincere, and I think he's just saying, look, we're moving past you. Maybe he knows something on the back end that this guy's just either never going to fight again or he's going to be gone for a long time or who knows what, but I think it's the first one, George.
Yeah, and you know, he softened it up a little bit. He said, Khabib is the man now, so Khabib gets to sit back and call the shots.
I would never say
that. You know, I get what he's saying, but the headline was the stinger. You know, because make no mistake, if you go side by side, Khabib versus whoever he defends, aside from Conor, won't sell as much as Conor versus whoever he comes back against. Are we in agreement there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in that regard, McGregor's the man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What I think Dana White just couldn't probably cover all in one sentence is McGregor's not the man when it comes to the lightweight title picture and how it's going to play out. You know what I mean? Like, that's a little bit different. Khabib is the champion, and him and Ferguson have had this you know, this fight that has been booked many times but has not come to fruition, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, George St. Pierre, you know, I don't know. But just the headline alone I knew was going to be, you know, an H-bomb of sorts. Here's Conor McGregor and his reaction. He says, he tweeted, "Who's not the man? Your man had that marquee event, did he? More like an event in a marquee. A tent in the fucking sand it was. Keep spoofing to yourself, horse. Jockstrap sniffer championships."
I've read that over and over, and I kind of get where he's going, but I still don't understand it. Do you?
Yeah, I think what he's saying is when you tried to have something in a part of the world that was supposed to really go off, and I think this is more of like not Habib is Russian, you know, from the Dagestani part, but more of the Middle East, the Muslim world,
mm-hmm.
It probably didn't have like the bang, like what maybe, you know, how they just had that big Oceanic fight for two Oceanic fighters, New Zealand and Australia, that's the big stadium show. I think that kind of a pop. Remember, Conor, I think, vacations in that area a lot, so he probably is familiar with, like, hey, did this thing really go off or not? Whatever. But he's going a little personal there with a tent and the sand and whatever. But it was more about jockstrap sniffer championships, keep spoofing to yourself, horse. I mean, it's starting to get a little bit more personal for him. Because Conor remembers, he feels like he's royalty. He feels like when he lands in Vegas, there should really, really be, goes, literally, a red carpet that comes out. And yeah, maybe those roses that, you know, at his feet. That's what he's become. Kind of an asshole in a way. But that was a shot. That was a shot from Dana White, you know, who calls the shots. He's the one who gets to decide who's doing what. And Conor didn't take to it. And who knows? What if Conor was a bottle in the proper 12, you know? It's a little bit emotional there. I don't know.
You brought something up, though, that made me think. What would sell more? Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz 3?
Yes, right there. That's done.
Or GSP and Khabib?
No, let me say this.
Because the fans have already seen that one, but they haven't seen this one. And you could arguably go, these are the two GOATs right here.
Yeah, but it's that casual fan. Something's going to come out of it. It's the casual fan. When McGregor fights, people barbecue.
GSP gets casual people, though.
People barbecue. People rent big screens in backyards. People just have... They go out of their way. It's a more of a worldwide experience. But
Khabib has grown a little bit. He has grown. You got to give him that. Now add in GSP, who a lot of those casuals do know.
I think GSP, the other one, was a $700,000 average pay-per-view guy. Mm-hmm. And then when he had a good dance partner, Nick Diaz, he went over $1 million. All right? So he's firmly capable of delivering a solid pay-per-view, him and Habib. But Habib was never really much of a pay-per-view star until the dance partner, which was Conor McGregor, and then they shattered. You know what I mean? So I think if you put them both together, you get about $1 million from those two. If you put the other two together, they average $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I might be wrong. I'm not saying, you know, next question, because I'm always right. I'm just saying that I just think that's the way it rolls.
Hmm.
Anyway, folks, that's how that went down. That was crazy, man. I don't know if that's the beginning of the end or if that's just high-level, ugly negotiations or who knows what. Here's a nice story. UFC Hall of Famer, Michael Bisping got a total knee replacement. It wasn't so much the, hey, look, another star had a surgery, or former star or whatever. Did you see the pictures that accompanied that?
Yeah, that, the little video.
That a little bit that? Too much?
Yeah, holy, but I mean, he already cow, did like the bionic eye thing, man, and like,
just the thing being inserted in his leg. I was like, what the
fuck? I'm starting to feel bad for him. Like, when you think about everything that happened with the eye,
mm-hmm.
Now the knee, and just other injuries that he's talked about in his life. This life of a professional fighter, like Michael Bisping's probably pretty well off at this point, between broadcasting, his MMA career, winning the title at the end. I think he's probably made some good money, but is it worth what the hell he's gone through?
I don't know that I see a lot of videos of him personally, but to me, anybody that was keeping up the schedule that he was, and by the way, he's been doing really good in the broadcast booth. I just figured, look, if you're flying and walking through airports and, you know, traveling, and he had a book tour a little while ago, still says he gets in there and trains a little bit. I just figured he was, in that regard, healthy. But he was saying walking his dog was getting to the point where he was in agony. So this thing must have really flared up in the last few months.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. I really feel for that guy.
Yeah. All right, jumping around here. So Dana White did say Macy Barber is set for stardom. You buying that?
I think she could be, but I think it's way too early to say that.
So do I.
But
she beat a tough fighter. Yeah, Jillian Robertson, I think, was 4-1 in the UFC. So getting past her is, you know, that's a pretty stiff test. And here's the other thing I was thinking was the women's divisions aren't as deep as the men's. You don't have to go through, like, too many fighters to basically get to that point. But the problem is, in my opinion, I see an NFC wildcard team having to fight New England.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And New England's still New England. All right, so the quarterback's 42, and you know, the coach, has he still got motivation or what? Fuck, they're 6-0, the New England Patriots. So I don't know, man. But maybe that's just his way of building a star. I don't know. It caught me off guard.
Yeah. You know? I know he's got to do it, and I think maybe he's just rolling the dice. Because I could see it. It's just way too early to say something like that. I mean, that's a big statement.
It sure is. Ngannou was in the news. He kind of did a little bit of media last week. Arfar Hanoun caught up with him, and he's saying he's interested in an AJ fight if it means high stakes, likely for a title shot.
Mm-hmm.
And AJ...
That's not going to happen, though, right?
No, not for a title shot, because... Let's go through the other scenario. If Cormier beats Miocic, according to Cormier, he's going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, you know, and then give up the belt. So, yeah, two people need to fight for that belt. So that's where Ngannou and Johnson could fight if the UFC gives Johnson that type of a pass.
Yeah.
I don't know that they do. They for sure, Ngannou will be one of the two. Could they give Miocic another title fight? Because under that scenario, he will have just lost to DC. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't see them doing that for AJ coming back like that.
Right. So what they could do is put that fight on the same fight card as DC and Stipe. Now you got insurance for the main event, and you have a clear number one contender. Because if AJ does beat Ngannou, then he does get to the front of the line. Now let's go with the other scenario. Stipe Miocic defeats Daniel Cormier. He wins the trilogy. Daniel Cormier goes, all right, I've had enough. I'm retiring. Because remember, he says he's retiring either way. And then now Miocic versus Ngannou is sellable if Ngannou wants to wait. But Ngannou really wanted to fight at UFC 245. I think he just really, really wants to fight. You don't want to piss off that big dude, that's for sure.
Oh, hell no. But you know what? He's human, just like everyone else, and he probably fears people just like everyone else. So I think if you're going to fight a guy like AJ, get him now, right? Off of a gigantic layoff, like something like that. I would take that skin.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Walt Harris offered to take on Francis Ngannou, so he's got a dance partner waiting for him. But he needs to get past Alistair Overeem. So we are all over the place because Ghost mentioned a nice little storyline for John Jones if he also wanted a piece of Alistair Overeem. That's when MMA can get exciting, right? When we can talk about these real-life possibilities. I don't in any way want to hate on pro wrestling. I'm a big fan of Busted Open, but sometimes I do find myself going, guys, we've gone on for like 2 hours, you know, like on one of their episodes, and they're still talking about stuff that they can control. And this is stuff that we can't control, and that, I believe, is what makes it more exciting, because in the end, this is real, real fighting. But yet, pro wrestling is super popular, you know, in the way they can control storylines. And
they can create their stars, though.
Yeah. You let your imagination just roll like that. But hopefully MMA is starting to hit a little bit of its stride in that regard. Now, how about John Jones actually ripping Chris Weidman? Did Weidman have it coming to him? Remember, both Rockhold and Weidman made it sound like we're moving up, like the Jeffersons, and we're coming for John Jones.
Yeah.
So does John Jones, he's allowed to retort, right?
Yeah. If you make that statement, you have to be prepared for the worst case scenario, and that was the worst case scenario. You got me. I mean, there's really not much Chris Weidman can say.
Do you want Joe Lozano to retire?
I think he's not a title contender,
right? We're being fair.
He's not a title contender. I think there's still fights that he can win, that he could still be competitive. I think if he takes the right fights and has the mindset of I'm not actually trying to put together streaks to win a title or anything like that, I'd like to see him stick around. He's always fun to watch.
Was it nice to hear Dana White talk about Cain Velasquez? You know, a lot of times when a fighter leaves, sometimes they don't get, like, praise heaped on them. And Kane did, and then he kind of detailed the WWE signing. It was really cool. Nice to leave through the door with your chin up held high and know that that door is there to be opened should you come back. Like, Kane, we saw Kane last week, and he was pretty stoked. Like, it doesn't always work out for these fighters when that stuff goes down.
I thought it was awesome to read. Just to hear Dana say those things, to see Cain Velasquez's reaction to that, I think that's the way it should be. I think it's really cool. And when you think about it, like, Cain is one of the UFC's biggest stars and always had that potential to be even bigger. It's just those damn nagging injuries that were keeping him out of it.
What about Colby Covington threatening to slap him in the face with the UFC belt if he puts the belt around him? Should he get past? Colby says, after I get past Kamaru Usman. Dana White said good luck with that, and he called him a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything goes, is Colby, is he in any danger of losing the fight just because he's defying management too much?
That's a good question. I think that's always a possibility, especially with a guy like Dana White. But Dana has this one thing. By the way, I've been salivating for this topic. Dana has this kind of tell, and it's just his face turns this crimson red when you know there's something that's really pissing him off.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to happen when anytime Colby Covington's brought up, it happens. So you could tell he genuinely dislikes this guy. And in the history of the UFC, it's just never really gone well when Dana White's your enemy. So I just feel like Colby's probably one loss away from being told to just bounce, right? I don't know, who knows how his numbers are going to do. Yeah, I think if his numbers were great, then maybe Dana would put up with it a little bit more. But if his numbers aren't that great, then I think he's going to end up going somewhere.
What if the first family shows and Colby Covington finishes him in the first round? He's got to deal with them, right?
Yeah, that is pretty
big. You can't
big.
Cut someone off a
win. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, yeah.
That wins, right there. Might take him into, like, a stratosphere, you know?
Uh-huh.
I don't want to say a McGregor stratosphere, but it could put him, like, in a Jones type of stratosphere.
Hey, remember the thing at the Palms? I mean, dude, this is not a happy guy.
And then Colby Covington doesn't stop there. You know the BMF title belt?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, the BMF belt. I don't know that it's really a title belt, but he's calling it the Broke Mediocre Fighter title challenger fight or fight or something like that. Him and Masvidal are getting into it. What is Colby thinking? Goes like, I mean, dude, he had a boomerang thrown at him by a UFC heavyweight. He got rushed at the buffet. Now he's got to, like, step on eggshells at his own gym. And then, of course, the boss that signs all the checks, he's turning crimson red. Like you said, enough's enough, isn't it? You got the fight. Now just go out there and win. Get Donald Trump there, the first family, whatever your shtick is. Enjoy the money, enjoy the fights, handle your business. But all this, do you really need all this?
Colby's super, super smart, though. I swear, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but the one that I would believe is if one day him and Jorge Masvidal just go, man, we were just bullshitting. Because Colby's smart like that. You never know. And actually, Masvidal doesn't get credit, but he's kind of smart like that, too. Now, I don't know. As gangster as Jorge Masvidal is, I don't know that you can play that role too long. I think eventually something's going to burn. But, Colby's just making enemies left and right.
And speaking of the Trumps, how about this? Dana White went there. You know, what do they say? Religion, politics, stay away from it.
Mm-hmm.
In a public setting. Dana White, though, he admits he doesn't agree with many Donald Trump tweets, but he still stands by him. So he showed a little bit of loyalty, but he showed a little bit of being real, realism. You know what I mean?
That's a good thing.
So did I, actually. So did I.
But, you know, they do the approval ratings for the president. Mm-hmm. For Dana right now, mine are pretty high.
Yeah, that was quite a week for him. Yeah, it was crazy. And I guess the last thing we'll leave with, circling back to UFC Boston, Greg Hardy, what did you think of that whole situation? The inhaler that apparently an inspector allowed him. It was cleared by his team and an inspector. But now the commission is saying, no, that's not true. And they're saying that it was WADA approved, so USADA was on board as well. I mean, there was like, it seemed like he brought a case to the table. Like, hold on a second, I'm innocent, and, you know, I have facts here. But yet at the same time, Massachusetts wasn't, you know, they're not letting them go through with this. And, mm-hmm. and they're you know, and then Dana looked pretty pissed at Dean Thomas, who's his buddy that he, one of his buddies that he pals around with when they go looking around for a fight. So you could tell, man, that was a mess out there.
I thought it was really confusing for many reasons. As soon as he brought it out, I thought, what are you doing? This is insane. What's about that? There's no way this can ever work out. Then as more information came out, I was like, okay. But if I'm going to do something like that, regardless of who clears what, I think a phone call has to be made to the UFC, to Dana White. You got to cross every T and dot every I, right? Like, you can't leave any stone unturned.
Mm-hmm. Let's finish with some more positive news. Actually, one just came in and one we should have said earlier. McGregor did make a special donation to a sick child's medical costs. So that was a story where it looked like to me, according to the mother of the sick child, McGregor was trying to stay low-key and behind the scenes. But he basically matched a donation. Well, let me say this correctly. Some of the apparel he wore from the Kremlin boxing gym was auctioned off, and Connor matched that donation. Mm-hmm. So that all goes to the kid. And then this just popped through, goes, McGregor's going to hold a press conference Thursday in Moscow. But take a guess, like, what's that?
And McGregor's holding it, not the UFC?
McGregor to hold press conference Thursday in Moscow, yeah. He posted a picture on Twitter of himself obtaining a Russian visa last week, and he's going to be holding a press conference on Thursday in Moscow.
It can't be UFC related because they would do it.
This literally just came through, so I'm reading. I'll just read it. The event will be organized by online sports betting site Paramatch, of which McGregor is a brand ambassador. He will meet with reporters on October 24th, first such event involving McGregor in Russia. Could this be? Perhaps he will make statements about his imminent return to the octagon. I don't know.
Proper 12 vodka?
No. I think, it sounds like this gambling thing, maybe he's announcing something there. I don't know.
Well, why go to Russia to do it?
Good question. That's the part that's intriguing, because The champion in his division is
Unless he just wants Russian. To be kind of a dick, which is funny.
Upstaging
Habib. Yeah.
Who knows? Well, that'll give us something to talk about on Thursday. Hold on. I should have kept this window open. If this is happening Thursday, because they're like 10 hours ahead, we might have a shot at talking about this on Thursday. Because I imagine the press conference. See, this guy's a really, really, he's a night owl. So I don't know if it would be an afternoon press conference or an early morning press conference. But if it's a morning to mid-afternoon press conference, it'll be done by the time we come in here. And we'll be able to talk about it.
So cool.
We'll leave it for then. All right, folks. We went a little extra long, but I'm telling you, there was a lot to cover, not just inside the octagon and the cages, but outside of it as well. So don't forget, there's some fights coming up this weekend that we'll talk about on Thursday. UFC Singapore, and then Bellator has a $1 million fight themselves. Cannot wait for that one. Goes Douglas Lima versus Rory McDonald. The winner wins a shiny Grand Prix belt. The winner becomes the Bellator welterweight champion in the case of Lima, or retains that belt in the case of McDonald. That's two belts we're talking about, and the $1 million payoff courtesy of 50 Cent. Mm-hmm. So that is pretty huge.
It's dope.
Yeah. All right, folks. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. As always, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. It's the same handles for Goes and I, at the Goes for him, at MMA Junkie George for me, at MMA Junkie Radio for us. And don't forget to keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We got you covered, man. We cover all of it. The news, the results, the drama, everything. You'll love it. There's rankings there. The schedule's there for all the big promotions. The results from all the past promotions. I mean, what more do you want, man? It's all there on MMA Junkie. And we have a fabulous app that's free. It's available for your tablets and all smartphones. Folks, go out there and be champions.